this week on The Inside Flap.
And this one guy comes up, and as I'm signing his book, he looks me in the face. He goes, "You have really great teeth." I say, "Oh, okay, cool, thank you." And so I'm just signing. He goes, "You have really cool incisors, like they're wolf teeth." And I was like, "Okay, thanks." He goes, "Yeah, you got really cool wolf teeth. I like wolf teeth." And he kept talking about them. And so I signed his book and like I handed it to him and like I'm like waiting for him to leave and he's still just talking about my wolf teeth. And so like a couple of the people who were working there kind of came over and like started nudging him out the way to get him to like give him the hint to like go ahead and leave. And he almost wouldn't. So like it took like three people to finally steer him out. And it was such a bizarre, weird kind of moment.
The nurse, she's like, "Well, let me show you the way out." And then she's pointing, like I don't have a GPS. Like, we all don't have smartphones with directions on them. I'm not going to remember it anyway.
No, I would never remember it.
But we're standing out there in the pouring rain.
People, oh, that's right. It's pouring down.
She goes, "All right, there you go. Well, give me a hug."
So weird.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado, this is the Inside Flap Podcast, Inside Chat Edition for you today. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated across the desk to my right is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
Howdy. We are glad you're joining us today. We got a great show for you today. We're joined by New York Times and USA Today bestselling author Jason Mott. He was nominated for the 2009 Pushcart Prize Award, and Entertainment Weekly listed him as one of their 10, quote, New Hollywood Next Wave.
Jeez.
People to watch.
That is nice. You know?
Pretty nice, huh?
You get into EW.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like those, like, if you get your book in the airport, if you get into, like, the EW. I mean, who cares about the other hoity-toity stuff?
That's right.
It's like that.
Who needs the New York Times when you got Entertainment Weekly?
I mean, I want to be, I want to
see. People's
people. Yeah, you want your book in Target. You
I
want
agree.
It out there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, his new book is called Hell of a Book, and it is. Had a great chat with Jason.
We talked strong.
It is strong. We talked Nick Cage movies. We talked about lunatic fans at some of his book signings. All kinds of good stuff. We'll have that. Man, just a great guy and a great chat. Really enjoyed it, and really enjoyed his book, too. We'll have that conversation for you in just a bit. Thank you guys for listening to The Inside Flap, Inside Chat. Laura and I just returned from a quick trip out to Indiana.
Whirlwind.
Northern Indiana, right
the
near
heartland.
Lake Michigan. Yeah, we dropped Sylvia off at a summer camp there. And, you know, had a nice little relaxing time while we were there. Of course, any trip for me wouldn't be, and we spent 3 nights there, wouldn't be a vacation for me without a little consternation. Now, we flew in Wednesday night, and we're recording this. What the hell day is it? Monday? Yeah, we got in
Thursday,
at 1 o'clock.
Thursday night.
Yeah, right now it's Monday is what I'm saying, though. We got in at 1 o'clock last night. So Wednesday night, we flew in. And Wednesday morning... And Thursday?
It's Thursday.
Every day is
honestly,
getting all mixed up. And it doesn't matter.
I'm not even going to bother. It really doesn't matter.
All right. We flew in Thursday night. So
pick
last Thursday morning at home, I was doing, putting the finishing touches. Frantically. I had to get the scaffolding back, putting the wood planks up on the ceiling, the vaulted, so you call that a vaulted ceiling?
Yeah.
What do you call it?
Uh-huh.
How tall is it anyway in the middle?
5,500 feet.
It's really, really
Goes
tall.
Goes to the moon, Dave.
And I had to finish the top bit before we hit our flight, so I had to get that done. So I'm doing a lot of sawing real fast, putting everything in place, getting it done, taking the scaffolding back, got it done. A lot of sawing going on. Finished up the job, got to the airport, got there Thursday night, no problem, got into the hotel, checked in, good to go. Now, Thursday night, just before bed, I go to take my contact lens out. So I grab the lens, pull it out, and as soon as I do, I feel like a sensation in my left eye. I take the lens out, the lens is out, the lens is in the case, and yet I still have this feeling, this irritation, I would call it, like there's something still in my eye. Like when I blink, when I close my eye, I feel like, gritty? There's something there. It's not, it's just, it feels like there's something in there. It doesn't necessarily feel gritty. It feels like there is something in there.
Yeah.
So I do the old open it wide with my fingers. I'm in the bathroom of the hotel. I'm like kneeling on the counter so I can get close to the mirror. And I try, you know, that thing, you know, where you're trying to look. I can feel it's like, seems like it's in the upper part of my eye. So I'm pulling it down to, but then you go to look in your upper part of your eye, but your eye moves. So you can't really look, and I can't move my eyes independently. That'd be nice.
I could never be a nurse or a doctor, anything dealing with the human body, because I get really grossed out. And you called me in.
And I called you in.
And you opened your eye, and it's that thing right. where like you're aware. Most of the time, I'm not aware there's like an actual eyeball in your head.
No.
But you, when you pulled it back, I was like, oh, it's an eyeball.
You got it up close.
And it gave me the oogies, and I didn't say anything.
Well, you gave a reaction. I was like, what is it? You're like, it's an eyeball. I'm like, yeah, it's an eyeball. Is there anything in it? No, I don't see anything. So I'm like, all right, you know what? Forget it. I'm exhausted. It's been a long day. Time for bed. Let's go to bed. Well, around 2:30 in the morning, I get woken up by, now there's a pain in my eye, and it feels like, for sure, something is still in there. And there's fluids coming out of my eye. It's red. I go into the bathroom, close the door so I don't disturb you or Sylvia. I'm looking again. Again, I don't see anything. And finally, I'm like, well, this is ridiculous. I've got to get a doctor's
This was like 3:45 in the morning, right?
Yeah, this is now turned into about 3 o'clock in the morning. So now nothing like being out of town and having medical insurance for a company based in Colorado. So I spent about 30 minutes in the bathroom with one eye now, because I got to keep the one eye closed, which, by the way, irritates it when you close it. So but then I open it, but then I can't read my cell phone. So I'm going back and forth trying to read where I can go.
Can I tell you a huge difference between you and me?
Sure.
I would have woken you up. And I would have complained vociferously.
Yeah, boy. You have to give you a ding for that.
I would have complained vociferously.
Right.
I would have asked you for help. Mm-hmm. I would have loudly,
that's a good point,
banged around the hotel room in anger.
Yeah. You would have thrown
you
stuff.
You didn't wake me up. I had no idea.
Well, what's the point? What are you going to be able to do? You know, but anyway,
I would want you to share in my pain.
I guess so.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's a credit to you is what I guess
okay,
I'm trying to
say. All right. I'll take it. I'll take what I can get. Now, I find out that there is these places called Minute Clinics that accept my insurance. And there happens to be one in a CVS not too far away, 10 minutes away from where we're staying. So I make an appointment for the next morning at 11 o'clock. So next morning, I get up, I drive over to the Minute Clinic, pouring rain, by the way, with one eye, but I can see all right. By the way, used to, when I went on vacation, take a pair of glasses with me, somehow got away from that. Now I got one contact in, I'm driving, but they tested me there and it was 20/20 vision. I was fine. Anyway, get there to the Minute Clinic. Which they should not call it the Minute Clinic, by the way. They need to read. Maybe they call it the 60-Minute Clinic. First, you
minutes,
go to,
minutes,
you know, it, yeah, minutes. They got the self-check-in kiosk, and I'm answering all kinds of COVID questions. I'm answering all kinds of medical history questions, insurance questions. It takes like 10 to 15 minutes just at the self-check-in kiosk. Finally get to it, finish it, sit down, wait. The doctor comes out of the little back room they got there, which is no more than a closet, really. She comes out, she says, come on back in. Brings me in, closes the door, sit down. Now, I'd just gone through all this insurance stuff at the kiosk. Well, now we got to go through it again. Well, I don't know about your insurance. Do they take? I'm like, yes, I looked it up. They said, go to the Minute Clinic, it'll be covered. Well, I don't know. She starts making phone calls, and I'm sitting there, and she's calling this place and that place. Another 10 to 15 minutes go by, and she says, okay, great. The insurance is good to go. We're all set. I say, great, finally. So she turns to me, and she goes, okay, all right. What brings you in today? And I said, well, my eye's been bothering me. It feels like I have, you know, something in my eye. She goes, ah, foreign body in the eye. Yeah. can't help you with that here. You're going to need to get a test done for that. And I don't have the equipment.
Why?
Are you kidding me?
I asked you what the problem was to begin with.
I was like, wasted a half an hour for no reason at all.
Well, she hems and haws over if she can take you. And then, it turns out they don't even... Why wouldn't you have asked that to the first question?
And she actually goes. She's like, yeah, I guess we should probably ask people, why they're here first. But I, of course, I got to be nice.
I know how your nice is, though, when you're irritated.
And I know. And I was extra irritated because my eye was irritated.
You were.
No, I said,
and you're on vacation-ish.
I guess so.
Yeah.
So she point. Luckily, there is an urgent care clinic nearby that she points me to. So I go over to there. This place, they get me in right away, and they take my insurance. But here's what happens over at the urgent care place. I get stuck with, I go back into the room. They take me back to the room. Nurse comes in to take, the blood pressure and all that stuff. Well, this nurse, I gotta say, I believe she was pilfering uppers from the medicine cabinet at the urgent care facility. This woman talked a mile a minute. She didn't stop. From the minute she entered the room, I got to know all about her and her birthplace of Philadelphia and when she graduated from high school in the 70s. And hey, guess what? She just got married for the second time. And
you were there forever? Was this part of the reason?
Part of the reason was the quote-unquote minute clinic. But another part, yes, was her. Was there in between getting my blood pressure, taking my pulse, she would just go on these diatribes.
Wow.
These tangents for no reason at all. I'm sitting there like, come on. Help me out here. So finally she takes a breath and asks me about myself. And I explain the situation and tell her, we're here from Colorado. And then she's like, well, what brings you out here? And I said, we're actually out here for a little vacation. And then she gives me the response that you don't want to hear when you're on a trip that you've just flown on an airplane to get to and got a rental car and a hotel room for 3 nights. She goes, here? Here. It's got a lake. It's nice. And then I had to go into the whole reason, Sylvia's camp and all this and that. And
that's
then,
funny that you just said vacation. I would have just said we're dropping our daughter off.
I guess I should have said that. Well, she
doesn't matter.
She goes and grabs a piece of paper, starts writing down all kinds of stuff, names of restaurants.
Her handwriting was crazy.
Towns to visit. Some exercise guru who runs a website and sells product, all while just keeping up this running patter.
Her handwriting was,
it was weird.
2 inches tall, scrawled, circular.
Yeah. Big piece of 8x11 paper.
Drawings of a madman.
And then, of course, she had to add more stuff to a sticky note and stick the sticky note on that.
Some of it didn't make sense.
She also,
instead of just writing...
She's on drugs.
Yeah, instead of just writing the word great, she did that G-R-8.
G-R-8.
Which I didn't know people did.
No, especially a woman who graduated high school in the 70s.
It was very odd.
And also the doctor, finally I did get to see the doctor who gave me a prescription for some eye drops, but also complained about that minute clinic, said all the time, they will send, if you go in there, she's like, a kid will go in there with a fever. Mm-hmm. Now, if you have a fever, you're going to have a high heart rate. But anytime they get anybody over there with a high heart rate, they send them right along to the urgent, they won't see them. They won't see them.
That's
she
so
says
annoying.
All the time they get people from the
so they're
quote,
there for
minute
nothing.
Clinic who had to deal with the same thing. Yeah, I don't know why they even bothered with the minute clinic. But anyway, the nurse, she's like, well, let me show you the way out. Okay, so she walks me to the front entrance. And then she's pointing, like I don't have a GPS. Like, we all don't have smartphones with directions on them. But it's like we're back in the 80s. She's pointing, all right, so you want to go down this road. There's a traffic light here.
I don't know like
that light.
Do that.
I can't stand it.
Because I can't
all,
retain it.
What are you
it,
doing?
And I have a smartphone.
Yeah, I'm not going to remember it anyway.
No, I would never remember it.
But we're standing out there in the pouring rain.
People, it's pouring down.
She goes, all right, there you go. Well, give me a hug.
So weird.
Like, what are you talking about? Give you a hug. You're the nurse practitioner. Why? I don't. What are you?
Was she a nurse?
I don't know. I'm sorry. Not a nurse practitioner. Okay. Just the nurse.
Yeah.
Just checking my blood pressure and pulse.
Huh.
Why am I giving you a hug? So I'm kind of, I'm like, all right, fine, whatever. So she's holding her arms out.
Like you've been there for a month.
Yes. Like we're best buds.
And she taught you how to
reunited.
Walk again. Taught you how like to walk again.
To look at him. Look at you. You're taking two steps like a big boy. Look at you. Give me a hug. So I walk out to the parking lot and I grab my clicker for the rental car, unlock the door, grab the door to the rental car, open it up. Well, it was not the rental car because as soon as I opened the door, the horn started honking. Oh. Real loud in this, we're like in the woods there, that this medical clinic in the middle of nowhere. It was probably that nurse's car. I slammed the door, ran over to my car, got in, and really just kind of peeled out of the parking lot as fast as I could before giving her another reason to come out.
Oh, and, that's really and funny.
But man, the point is, don't let people talk to you, I guess. I don't know.
I've been in that situation a few times in
You're
my
trapped.
Life. And you
You're
think,
trapped.
Is this person on something? Is usually mm-hmm. what you wonder. What yeah. is going on with them?
Talking so fast about yeah. nothing for no reason at all.
And you get trapped by that person. Yeah. And I still remember even as a young person, I had that happen with a really weird woman and she ended up crying. Like all kinds of strange things. And you think, am I a magnet for these people?
Yeah, well, that's what you get older, I'm a crazy magnet. No, there's
realize,
just a lot of crazy
no,
people out there.
No, there's just some people that are either mm-hmm. taking something or didn't take something and needed to have taken something.
Yep. Well, speaking of crazy people, we talked to Jason Mott. I talked to Jason Mott the other day. His new book is Hell of a Book. Now, you know, if you're going to name your book Hell of a Book, it better be a hell of a book. Of course, you know, I talked to him about that. It wasn't his idea. He didn't want it to title it that. But you'll hear more about that in our conversation. Luckily for him, this is a hell of a book. This is a book that will get you thinking about kind of like just our society and the world in which we live. It'll also put a smile on your face, as this book is very, very funny. There's two storylines in this book that alternate back and forth. One follows an unnamed black author on his book tour across the country as he is plugging his new book, which, by the way, happens to be called Hell of a Book. The author is a guy who has an incredibly strong imagination and often daydream stuff that isn't there. And is constantly questioning what his real reality is. And some extraordinary entertaining bits of magical realism. He talks to Nick Cage and also encounters other strange occurrences. But he also talks to and interacts with an unnamed character called The Kid. Now, in the alternate storyline, we meet a young black boy named Soot growing up in the South and facing racial injustice and inequality. This is a book that points a finger at the really just the absurdity of racial injustice when you get down to it. It tackles the heavy issues of police brutality, but also in keeping with the absurdity of it all, keeps it meta and funny with the scenes with the unnamed author on his book tour as you sit around reading and wondering if the storylines ever will mingle. I loved this book so much. This is really a powerful, incredible read that will frustrate you, it will madden you and the world around you, but it will also, you know, kind of get you thinking and really make you want to have a conversation about this book with other people, as well as entertain you. And speaking of entertaining, Jason Mott was very entertaining to talk to. I really enjoyed our chat. So here, you'll be interested to hear what, you know, we talked to a lot of authors. We said, do you listen to music when you write? Well, wait till you hear what Jason Mott does while he writes.
Good tease.
What he has on. Very, very interesting. Check it out. Here he is right now for you, the great Jason Mott. Good old Denver.
Good old Denver. Now, you mentioned the blue Mustang statue out there by the airport. Do you know the story behind that?
I remember reading the story about that. Yeah, yeah. It's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We call it Blucifer around here.
I did not know that. That's awesome.
Yeah, well, the guy who sculpted it was actually killed in the making of it.
Whoa.
Yeah, yeah. He was putting it together, and a huge chunk of it actually fell off of the sculpture and landed on him, and it severed his severed an artery and killed him.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Wow, there's a fun fact for you.
I know. Nothing like a little, a little femoral artery humor at 9:30
exactly.
in the morning. Anyway, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on. Where are you? North Carolina? You're North Carolina?
Yeah, North Carolina. Thanks for having me.
Very good. Yep. Go Tar Heels. Well, I'm a Seminole guy myself, so I can't say go Tar Heels.
Okay. You said Tar Heels, not Duke, so you're okay.
Okay. That's true.
Okay. You had a 50-50 chance. You chose well. That's a good job.
When in doubt, always go against Duke.
Exactly. Exactly.
Although now, you know, this year with Krzyzewski retiring, there's going to be all kinds of Duke sentimentality out there, I'm sure, so we'll be sick of it.
Yeah, yeah. We're always sick of Duke, though. So that's how it goes.
Nay, wait a second. Where's the sport coat? Jason, come on, man. What the hell is going on here?
We don't do those anymore. We burned all of those. We don't do those anymore. They're done.
Good, good. It's too hot for those anyway. Anyway, listen.
Exactly.
Jason, loved your book. Hell of a book. This book gave me chills. It brought me to tears. It made me laugh, and it even made me start to question my sanity at times, but in a good way.
Good, good.
Plus an added bonus, you get an appearance by the great Nicolas Cage. Now, Jason, after reading all the seemingly disparaging things you had to say about these kinds of questions, and it pains me to ask it, but I think I'm contractually obligated to ask you anyway. hey, what was it that inspired you to write this book, Jason? Sorry about
totally
that question.
That's a totally fair question. So Hell of a Book was inspired by my first, it started initially with my first book tour for The Returned. When The Returned came out, I went from being a guy who worked at a call center to being a full-time author on tour for like 2 months straight of constant travel and talking about the book and selling the book. And when I finished, I knew I wanted to write a story about that because it was such a bizarre, wacky, fun, insane process. Uh-huh. So I wrote a manuscript about that. I sent it to my agent. She wasn't very impressed by it. And rightfully so. Like the manuscript was just kind of missing something.
Sure.
So I put it away. And then you fast forward a few years. And about 3 years ago, as I was just trying to kind of come to terms with the news reports of like all these shootings and police mm-hmm. violence and trying to make sense of it all. A buddy and I had been talking about it for like literally a month. Every day we've been just discussing new stuff and trying to figure out our place in it. And he said the very obvious statement of, hey, you're a writer. Why don't you write about this? I said, that's a brilliant idea.
Hey,
that? Exactly. You'd think it would have come to me, but no, it took somebody else to say it. So I started writing about just my thoughts on race and some of my personal life experiences. And I remembered that story of the author on book tour. So I combined the two together, and that's where Hell of a Book came from.
Mm. Well, and I love how you go back and forth between the two because both storylines are filled with so much absurdity and the fact mm-hmm. that we even have to deal with either one that it really just kind of, and of course, Nicolas Cage would be the perfect person to bring into that. Why Nick Cage? Are you a big fan of Nick Cage or is it just his general kind of persona and the fact that he.
No, I'm a massive Nick Cage okay. fan. Like, a hardcore, and I have been for my entire life. I am a massive Nick Cage fan, but then there's also some thematic devices as to why I chose to have that Nick Cage scene. Nick Cage is interesting because I think he understands how the world sees him, and
yes,
he controls
he
that narrative.
He, yes,
yeah, mm-hmm. he embraces it and controls that narrative, and that's something that the story wants to talk about. That like Hell of a Book wants to talk about perception and how we are seen by others and how it impacts us. Mm-hmm. So who better than Nick Cage to have that discussion?
Yeah. Absolutely. Although I could have appreciated a little more Raising Arizona love for him. Although he did mention Bad Lieutenant, Poor to Call, which I think is a great performance, hell of a performance mentioned in your hell of a book. Mm-hmm. So thank you for bringing that up. Now, your main character, unnamed, he has a healthy imagination, kind of often loses himself in his fantastical wanderings. Are you this kind of, is that something else that's autobiographical in this book? Are you kind of a
yeah,
guy
there's a little bit of that going on. I've been writing for so long that like characters just persist. Like once you write a story about it, you know, you spend 2 years writing a novel, you don't just leave the characters behind. They follow you forward. And so trying to find that balance between my imagination and the real world, sometimes it's not quite on the level of the author, but it like there's definitely some truth in that, that sometimes imagination becomes more real than real world.
I'm guessing that's not great for your relationships as far as you don't let it affect that, do you?
No, I ruined my relationships all by myself. I don't need any help from the outside world to ruin my relationships. So that's okay.
Good. Now, you have a line in the book that really struck me, which is this, and I'm going to quote, because what more do you want to hear than your words quoted back to you? And that is this: the words we say never seem to live up to the ones in our head. And I really love that, and it resonated with me, because we like to think that we can articulate what we have that's going on up here. Easier said than done. And then once you've opened your mouth and you've just kind of butchered what you're thinking, there's really no taking that back. Is this an idea that really kind of resonates with you as well?
Yeah, very much so. I think there's a song lyric that's kind of speaks to that as well. Like, it's one of those thoughts that I think people have touched on before, where you spend so much time trapped in your body, trapped inside your head, and you want to say the thing that makes it all okay and makes it really understood. And that's what, I spend my entire life writing, trying to say certain things, and they never really come out the right way. They just, for whatever reason, you spend 90,000 words trying to say one thing and somehow you still don't get it right. That's the reality of writing.
I think you got it right in this book, in hell of a book. I think you really did. Are you the kind of guy who, like, carries this phone around with you, and when you have a thought, you just kind of put it down in a notepad? Or
yeah, I'm an old school, so I carry I have a few notebooks that I carry around with me, and like, whenever I have stuff, I just write them down and go back to it later. I've got a file on my computer, so whenever I'm working on like a full novel, I'll have an accessory file that's just random thoughts and random ideas and just things I want to add into the story later.
What percentage of those do you actually end up using, and what percentage do you look at and you trying to remember, like, what the hell was I thinking? What is this?
It's actually a pretty high percentage.
You got a good okay, good, like a free throw, or like a free throw shooter.
I've learned to whittle things down pretty well. So about 75% of things that I write will make it in some form.
That's good. I mean, that's a solid free throw percentage, if we
exactly.
Back to college basketball. So a hell of a book deals about what it's like to be a black man in America. And I feel like you kind of riffed on Ellison's Invisible Man. But for me, you really twisted it in a way that I found really powerful. And in Hell of a Book, your main character struggles with this idea of being obligated to write about, the black experience and the black condition. You said your friend told you to write this book. Did you feel like an obligation, or do you feel like, because it didn't seem, the way I read it, didn't seem like, it didn't come across as something like you were obligated to write. I mean, it felt real, it felt raw, it felt emotional, it was powerful. Was that something that just kind of came about, or do you feel like an obligation to talk about it?
No, I definitely felt there was a bit of an obligation. And then part of the novel, part of my personal journey was trying to figure out where that obligation was coming from. Like, was it a self-imposed obligation? Was it truly a societal obligation? Was it a moral obligation? Because as a black author, you're rarely, almost never, I'll say, allowed to just be an author. Like, you're always through that lens of your skin color. And that's part of the problem of writing. I think that crushes a lot of creative voices, where they're not allowed to just be the creative types they want to be because they're a certain skin color or a certain gender or whatever that thing is. For me, there was definitely that balance between trying to find my obligation to say something versus my desire to just exist and not have to be a part of the conversation. And at some point, I think we all have to be a part of the conversation.
And especially now, after what we've been through this past summer, and you incorporate mm-hmm. that in the book as well, it's incredibly timely. And how else, when else, if you're going to write that book, when else but right now? Because it's a message that, we, as absurd as it sounds, we still need to hear that message. And I guess the more that people really need to be hit over the head with it before, if it'll ever sink in. But I feel like, I'm a high school teacher, and I teach a lot of black and Hispanic students. The majority of them are. And so I feel good about the future. Do you have like a good feeling about things moving forward? I don't know how it can get any worse than the past 4 years, but I mean, do you feel good about moving forward, or are we kind of stagnant?
I'm not sure how I feel. If I'm honest, I'm not sure how I feel. Like, there are moments of optimism. Like, there are voices right now that are being heard that have never been heard before. And yeah. I think that's a beautiful, wonderful thing. And yet at the same time, there are efforts being made to squash voices, like efforts in ways that have never been made before. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure. It's a coin flip, if I'm honest. Like, it's an emotional coin flip. I'm not sure how I feel about the future right now.
Yeah. It really is something that's.
I want to be optimistic. Like if I have to pick like 51%, I'm going to go optimistic and say things are going to be okay. So I'm hoping that's the way to go.
I'm a glass half full kind of guy, so I'm always kind of rooting for things. But like I said, everything's off the table after what we've seen the past 4 years. You know. So.
Yeah, I agree. There are no more rules anymore.
There really isn't. And you know, we marched in a lot of the parades, and something you talk about in the book is, and what is just heartbreaking for me is that we have to say, and well, your line in the book is, "Dead kids don't linger on the brain like they used to." Mm-hmm, and it's just when you stop, and I kind of really stopped on that and pondered on that for a little bit, and then when you go to these marches and these rallies and you hear say my name, and then it's just like we have a whole list of names to get through, and by the time you get to the last one, you've forgotten the first one. It's just, I mean, are these people doomed to be forgotten? I mean, we hope that their lives have been not lost, in futility, but it's really sad. It's sad.
Yeah. It's a heartbreaking reality that these things occur so much, and they've been occurring for so often that you do forget the names, and there's usually like a painful realization that you're like, oh man, what was the name of that kid that,
yeah.
And it's like, you realize like, oh my God, I forgot. And yet that's the harsh reality of like how often these things occur and just how prevalent they are. And that's part of the problem. That's part of the thing we need to actually fix.
Yep. And I feel like that's what you touched upon in the book without, I don't know why you chose to, or why did you choose to, like you got the kid in the book who goes nameless, and also your main character who is nameless. Like what came about with deciding to go, did you want to just keep it universal, or what was the thoughts behind that?
Yeah, there's a mix of the desire to keep it universal, but there's also a discussion in the book about identity and about the loss of identity and like not being seen for who you are. And so having the author be named felt like a betrayal of that thematic device.
Okay.
Because again, so much of the author is, and there's also just this timeless component that like 10 years from now, sadly, this story will probably still be relevant. Like there'll still be shootings. There'll still be people trying to sort out the leftovers of that life. And so I think the author and the kid both being unnamed kind of adds that theme that like, this could be 30 years ago. This could be 10 years in the future. Is still the same narrative, and like these aren't specific people anymore. They're almost an archetype of American culture now that these terrible things happen, and we don't name the names anymore because there's so many of them that could fit these names.
Yeah, and it does have a kind of a timeless quality to it. Hell of a Book does. It could be set anywhere. Well, apart from the fact that there's a media trainer. I don't know if there were media trainers back in the day. You didn't know, you never had it. You never consulted with a media trainer, did you?
No, media trainer is very real.
What?
That is that is a very real person that I have definitely been to meet before.
No!
Now, I will completely say the media trainer in the novel is dialed up a few notches.
No, that's impossible. Come on.
No, media trainers are very real people, and they do a good service. I would not demean them. They do a good demonize. They do a great service, but they're very real people. They are completely real people.
Now, you said when you were on this book tour that you used as inspiration for a book, a lot of wacky, weird, absurdist things happened. What can you give me? You got to give me an example of something kind of crazy or wacky that happened. Come on, you can't just throw that out there.
I'll give you the bizarre kind of creepy, weird story is that I was signing at this really big event. It was like a book expo. So I'm sitting at this big table and I'm just signing books from people that are coming up. And this one guy comes up, and as I'm signing his book, he looks me in the face. He goes, "You have really great teeth." I said, "Oh, okay, cool, thank you." And so I'm just signing. He goes, "You have really cool incisors, like they're wolf teeth." And I was like, "Okay, thanks." He goes, "Yeah, you got really cool wolf teeth. I like wolf teeth." And he kept talking about them. And so I signed his book and like I handed it to him, and like I'm like waiting for him to leave, and he's still just talking about my wolf teeth. And so like a couple of the people who were working there kind of came over and like started nudging him out the way to get him to like give him the hint to like go ahead and leave. And he almost wouldn't. So like it took like three people to finally steer him out. And it was such a bizarre, weird kind of moment. So that's one of the bizarre moments of book tour.
That is weird.
It was very weird.
You should have gone over the fiction section, grabbed Zadie Smith's white teeth off the thing and handed him a copy of that. That's bizarre. Oh my God.
Yeah. There's some weird times out there, man.
Do you, Now, your character in the book had an inscription that he used when he signed every one of his books that kind of left people in tears when they read it. You don't do anything like that. You just, I'm guessing, just sign your name or maybe ask for...
I try to just sign my name and, thanks for reading or something. I try to terrorize people by writing things like that.
I slapped my knee when I read what I could just... I wish, maybe you should try that. I mean, come on. Do you get to go out and meet and greet with wolf teeth lovers everywhere for this book, or are you trapped in this Zoom
not just
world?
Yet so right now the publisher is still kind of shy of COVID, so we're not sending out, it's all virtual right now, but I do start doing some appearances in the fall, I think, and then I think when paperback comes out next year, then I'll probably be on like an actual traveling tour for things, so we'll see how that goes.
That's good. You're looking forward, are you looking forward to that? Do you like the spike?
I actually am. Okay, like it's yeah. After being in quarantine for a year, I'm ready to get out in the world and see people again, so I'll take a book tour right now.
Whose idea was it? It's a great name. It's a great title for the book. And I'm sure, I mean, you probably have a bunch of jagaloons coming up to you saying, hey, that was a hell of a book. But I mean,
one
how?
Or two, maybe.
I'm sure. One or two hundred. What? Whose idea was it to name, to give that? So many, I can't stay, so many books nowadays. I can't, I'm like, what the hell did I just read? I can't remember the title. Thank God we have a title here that's not only memorable, but resonant. What's the deal there?
Whose idea was it? It's actually my agent came up with it, honestly. Like, so I'm really bad at titling things. Like, all of my novels have been titled by someone else, either my agent or my editor at some point. So when we finished the manuscript, my agent was reading it and she's like, do you have any title suggestions? I sent her some suggestions. She hated all of them. She's like, they're terrible titles. And so in the manuscript, everyone, this main author has written a novel and everyone keeps telling me it's a hell of a book, it's a hell of a book, it's a hell of a book. And my agent just said, that should be the title of the novel. And I was like, that is such an arrogant title. There's no way we're calling this hell of a book. And she was like, just trust me, we're calling it hell of a book. And here we are.
Here we are. Well, you gotta, I mean, it has to be. You can't, like you said, it does come across. But if you don't write the book, it has to be good.
Exactly. So, that's such a bar. That's such a high bar to put up. I was like, there's no way we're calling it that. But so things happen. So there we go.
It is. In my mind. As one guy out here in Denver, Colorado, it is a hell of a book. You have any interesting writing quirks that you do while writing?
I watch a lot of movies when I write, which I think people probably don't expect. Like, I watch a lot of 80s action movies when I'm writing. So I'll turn on like Predator and Cobra and just Jean-Claude Van Damme movies. Like, they're good background noise for me to write with. So weirdly enough, like, I will oftentimes write with, Arnold Schwarzenegger shooting monsters in the background.
That's hilarious. That's crazy. I would expect it based on your book. I would expect it. Maybe you have some, Double Indemnity playing in the background, some old noise. But I'm guessing
for this novel, I did actually.
Oh, did you really? Yeah.
Yeah. For this particular novel, there was definitely a lot of Double Indemnity and Kiss Me Deadly and a lot of those really great movies playing in the background for this one.
Yeah, those books are great. I love Fred McMurray and Double Indemnity. My friend and I, we would go around talking like him all the time. Key, we call each other Keys. Hey, Keys, she.
That's terrific.
Was a lot of fun. So what do you like to do when you're not writing or going on book tours?
So I watch a lot of racing. I'm a car guy, so I watch Formula One racing. I love watching that. I do Brazilian jiu-jitsu because that's just a fun thing to go do on the evenings, and I play a lot of video games. I'm a big video gamer as well.
Oh really? What do you a little COD, what do you play? COD, what do you got?
No, I'm a Street Fighter Tekken player, so I play fighting games a lot, and I also play a lot of like Dark Souls, Bloodborne, all those really difficult games.
Wow, I'm more like a
you're a Call of Duty guy?
No. We play. I get my daughter's 15, so we play a little Fortnite. But then
there you go.
I was playing this game. It's like I like the kind of like the Super Mario type games where it's levels and you go. But we play this one. It's like from the 30s, and it's called Cuphead. But
I know that. I own that game.
Oh, you do?
That's a difficult game. Yeah.
Oh my God, it's so hard. And so I play on and off for like 6 months now. I finally got on the last level, but good God.
Yeah, that is a difficult game. It's beautiful though. It's so beautiful, but it's a difficult game, man.
Well, that's what I love about it is the music, the original compositions and the artwork, and that is so good. So what is so for a typical day for you, a typical writing day, you get up, you turn on Tango and Cash, and then how long are we writing for? Like, what's a good writing day for you?
Yeah, so I get up at about 5 or 5:30. I'm a morning writer, so I get about 5 or 5:30. I turn on Tango and Cash. I do own that DVD, by the way. Like, let it rock.
It's great. I love that movie.
Dude, that's one of the best movies. Yeah. It's one of the best 80s action movies ever.
It is.
So yeah, I'll usually do 10 pages a day. That's kind of my quota for like our writing day is 10 pages a day. Sometimes if I'm lucky, I can do that in about two and a half hours. Mm. If I'm not lucky, it's a full 8 hour day of me sitting there trying to get the words out. But then after that, which is usually, I usually wrap up around noon or 1 o'clock. Then it's, you know, I punch out and I, you know, play some video games, go do jujitsu, whatever it is, hang out.
I don't think people don't realize what a great decompressor and de-stressor video games are. You know what I mean? Like, you tell someone you play video games, they're like, what the hell? Why aren't you out there reading? Well, yeah, I'm reading a lot of books, but I'm also playing a hell of a lot of reading. There is no better de-stressor than sitting down with a great, or maybe a little, I'm a runner myself. I like to go running, but. Nice. What do you go to the gym? Do you grapple around with other guys? How does that work?
I there's a gym locally I go to. I've been going there for about 4 or 5 years now. It's a great family of people, man. So I go there and we call it the struggle snuggle. We go there and just try to choke each other out. It is a lot of fun, man. It's some of the best people I know right now. They're just great people.
Wow, that's awesome. Do you get kind of pump yourself up? You get psyched up, or is it more like?
You get psyched up, but it's also very relaxing. Like it's chess. It's a very physical form of chess. So you go there and like you have a few laughs. Like you can't be tangled up with a person like that and not laugh at how silly some things are. So like you get hyped up, but you also just go and have fun. Man, you catch up with people, you have fun, and you learn about yourself and learn about them, and it's a blast.
That sounds cool. Did you always want to be a writer, or did you want to be a street fighter growing up? What are we talking about, Jason? What do we got?
No, I wanted to be a writer since I was about 14. I came across a novel by John Gardner and fell in love with it. And it's like, oh, man, I want to learn how to be a writer. And I got serious about it in my early 20s. But yeah, writing has been the thing I've always wanted to do for sure.
Mm, cool. And what kind of, besides John Gardner, what other kind of books were you reading growing up?
A lot of mythology and folklore. I think that's why so many of my books have like magical realism kind of components, because like I just lived in that world of folklore and mythology. Still like in William Golding's Lord of the Flies is another big book for me. Mm. So like, you know, kids murdering kids, just another great novel. So a lot of those kinds of stories are the ones that kind of shaped me as a writer.
Great. And I love, just absolutely love the magical realism you employ in Hell of a Book. It really kind of lends itself, again, to that absurdity to it, to like, what are we doing here? Is this real? What the hell is going on? All right, Jason, it's time now for our segment we call Quick Six, Six Quick Questions, in which we just find out just one a little bit more about you. Here we go.
All right. Oh, boy.
What is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I watch that so often. I'm a Trekkie.
Are you really?
I'm a hardcore Trekkie. Hardcore.
How about that? So what, out of all the different iterations of the show, what do you put at the top of the pyramid there for you?
Okay, so I won't count the original series just because that's always the default answer because it started the whole thing, but Deep Space Nine is probably my favorite. I think it's the most complex and layered, and Next Generation is right there behind it, but Deep Space Nine is probably my favorite.
All right. Very good. My sister and my father were the big Trekkies. I always felt terrible. They would sit down, and I look over there and see my sister bonding with my father, and I'm like, what do I got? What do I got? I just could never get into it. How about this, Jason? What fictional world or place would you like to visit?
That's a tough question.
Now, if it's a dangerous place, don't worry. We'll bring you back in. So you don't have to stay there. Just pop in for a quick little visit. Where are we going? I mean,
you know, Middle Earth is always good. You know, I'm a Lord of the Rings fan too. Middle Earth would be a good place to go hang out. So yeah, I'll take Middle Earth.
Okay, yeah, it's interesting. A lot of authors have that. Have that answer.
I mean, I think it's a very formative place, man. So I think I could definitely hang out there.
Cool. How about this? Besides Tango and Cash, give me a top five favorite movie of yours.
So I got to throw in some Nick Cage here, just so.
Yes.
Another one would probably be I'll give Raising Arizona.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Mandy, which is a more recent one. Those two in particular are like the extent of Nick Cage's talent, and I love it.
Hold on now. Breaking news. Mandy, I do not know this movie. What is this?
How do you? Oh, my.
I don't know.
Your life is hollow. Your life is hollow and empty.
Meaningless. I did a, what the hell? What is Mandy?
It came out about 2 years ago, I think.
Wait a second. I think, is it like Southern, like a guy, a loner type, an older kind of, I think I read the book this was based on. What is it about?
Well, I don't think it's based on a book. I think it's, so there's a director who did a film a few years back called Beyond the Black Rainbow. which is a very kind of dark, it's almost like a metal kind of movie. And Mandy is about this guy. It's a revenge story at his core. This guy's out and they come, these weird guys come and kill his wife and he goes on his revenge spree. But that does not do it justice at all. It is a LSD trip like you've never been on before. It's very violent. So if people are watching this and they're like, oh, it's very violent, very bloody. So like, if that's not your cup of tea, then don't do it. But if you can handle that, it is one of the, you've never seen a movie like Mandy before.
Oh my God. I am so excited right now. We're watching that one tonight. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Good God.
Yes. And I would say give it time. It starts very slowly.
Uh-huh.
But once it gets going, you've never ridden a ride like that before ever.
All right. Very good. Always up for a good Nick Cage. I loved Leaving Las Vegas. That's a heartbreaking one.
Yeah.
How about
that
this?
Was hard to watch.
Yeah, it really is hard to watch. It really is. That's one you can only watch once. You got to see it once, but you can't. Yes. That's not one where you go back and let me dip back into this one. No. Jason Mutt, this one might be a little bit tougher. Give me a top five favorite book.
Well, I've already said, so Grendel by John Gardner is definitely one of my top five. Mm-hmm. Lord of the Flies. More recent, I would say I'm reading a book right now called Monsters by Barry Windsor Smith. It's a graphic novel, and it is on its way to becoming one of my favorite reads right now.
Oh.
So I'll say Monsters by Barry Windsor Smith.
All right, cool. Very good. And how about this, Jason? Do you have a go-to karaoke song?
Purple Rain by Prince. I'll take that.
Oh, man. That's a
I'm going to butcher it. I will butcher that song, but I will sing the hell out of it.
That's all right. It's always any time, any day is a good day to hear that song.
Exactly.
And finally, you already answered this one. What book are you currently reading? Monsters. Give me, you got another one that you got on your shelf. What's on your TBR you're looking forward to reading?
There's a novel called Ace Boone Coon, which was recommended to me.
Danny Gardner. We talked to him on the
show.
Awesome.
Yeah, that was recommended by someone. I've got to crack that open and read that, but I've heard a lot of good things about that. So that's my next one to read.
It is so good. No, it's really, really good. You'll enjoy it. Yeah. Such a good book and a great guy. I asked him one question, and then he talked for about 45 minutes.
Awesome.
I mean, it was quite an experience. It was a roller coaster ride with that guy. It was a lot of fun. And this has been a lot of fun. It's been great talking to you, Jason. Really appreciate your time. I can't tell you how much I love this book. Hell of a book. So good. And I appreciate it. And I appreciate you writing the book. So take care. And I hope you have a great day out there in North Carolina. Go Tar Heels.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. This was great, man.
All right. You got it. Take care.
Take it easy.
Bye-bye. The Inside Flap. All right. Thanks so much to Jason Mott. Really loved that conversation. Great guy. Now I'm going to have to go watch not only Mandy with Nick Cage, but I'm also going to have to go watch Tango and Cash. Thanks
you
to
seen that before?
Jason. Yeah, I've seen it, but it demands a rewatch now. I have to talk to him about it. Well, thanks so much for listening. My name is Dave Medicus, and we will see you next time.
Adios.
Yeah, you got really cool wolf teeth.